Greetings, this is James Gilman with As You Wish Talk Radio, broadcasting live from the East Seti Ranch, otherwise known as UFO and Paranormal Central. We've had some amazing things happening at the ranch here. We just had 12 golden ships hovering over the ranch last week, and the sheriff's office got all kinds of calls on that one. So I got a little phone call here asking me what's going on, and I said, if they're golden and they're really bright, don't worry about it. They're the good guys. So it's kind of funny how that's going on. There's been sightings all over the world right now, especially in the United States, and they're actually hitting the press. Go figure. So there's a lot going on. Watch the skies. And wanted to tell people contact has begun. The video is out, Ultimate Soul Journey. That book's out, too. I never talk about the marketing aspect. I keep forgetting, so finally, after twisting my arm, I just have such a good time doing these shows, I forget. But anyway, without any further ado, I'd love to welcome my guests on, William Henry. William, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here, James. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
It seems like we've had a very similar path, although I haven't been able to travel as much as you have, but we seem to be both moving into talking a lot about the awakening and healing of humanity in the earth, the ascension process, and a lot of that ancient knowledge, and that seems to be right up your alley.
Absolutely. You know, I watched Contact Has Begun, and wow, I loved that DVD, by the way. Thank you so much for producing that or making that available. I mean, just an incredible story. And I mean, there was one point in there where you said some things that could have come right out of my mouth, and the focus is on the body. The focus is on the body as a temple. It's about preparing the body and shifting your body. And I said, yeah, that's it, right on. That's exactly the message right there.
Mm-hmm. And you're working a lot towards, it seems the topic today is the 2012 Ascension, and your research has shown this to be an event that's recorded in almost all the ancient scriptures and tablets and temple walls and whatever.
That's right, yeah. A lot of people are focusing exclusively on the Maya aspect of 2012, but when you look into other traditions, I mean, the central image that that I pull out of the whole Maya 2012 idea is they talk about this galactic alignment with the center of the Milky Way galaxy, and they describe a ladder emerging from the Milky Way center, and from out of this ladder emerges what they describe as a serpent rope. Mm-hmm. And I picked up on the thread of John Major Jenkins' work when he said, well, I think we can take out the archaic Mayan term serpent rope and put in the modern term wormhole, and we have an accurate picture of what the Maya said is going to be happening.
Uh-huh.
And further, when the Maya are talking about this wormhole, they describe a reciprocal relationship that we have with the galactic center, and they say that someone has to open the door of that wormhole on this side. Well, when you look at it from that perspective of the opening of a door or a gate, that's described in every single tradition. You talk about the Judeo-Christian tradition, you talk about the Essenes, you talk about a belief in two different messianic figures, if you will, or forms of consciousness, knowledge. And there's always a figure who's opening the door or gate to paradise. And that,
mm-hmm.
that to me, is the potential of this moment in time.
It's interesting. You know, I had a dream not too long ago. It was quite an interesting dream, but I was on a horse. And I kept riding up this mountain, and there's all these switchbacks, and I kept opening up gates and letting people through, and I'd go up to the next gate and open it, the next gate and open it. And I thought it was a quite interesting dream, and the more I think about it, I can kind of see that there's all these different levels and gates, and I think that's what they're trying to show me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course, when you talk about a horse, you're thinking of, I think of the book of Revelation, behold, a white horse, and he that rode him was called Faithful and True, and that horse is always a symbol for higher consciousness,
mm-hmm.
and that is the ultimate trip that we're all on here, is to learn to open these gates of consciousness within ourselves and become fully awakened beings.
Now, there seems to be levels. I know there's all kinds of initiations the ancient mystery schools used to do, and they would take people through all these different levels. Do you think those correspond maybe with the chakras or?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the clearest representation that I had, it was around a 12th or 13th century woodcut that showed the caduceus rod, which symbolizes the spinal cord system, and the kundalini rising. And then on top of this caduceus rod, the rod was illuminated, and then on top of the rod was a winged or flying horse. And so it gave me the very clear impression that, yeah, it absolutely has to do with the awakening of our spiritual energy within us and ultimately developing a vehicle symbolized by the winged horse through which we can travel the stars.
You know, maybe Pegasus actually existed. It's hard for me to wrap around a horse with a big enough wingspan to fly, you know, but
right.
You know, I don't want to put anything, you know, maybe in a less dense world, you know, there was
right.
Things of that nature.
I mean, you think of Muhammad, his horse Al-Barak, that through upon which he ascended into the heavens. Obviously, he's not flying upon a horse, but it's a symbol for this ascended consciousness.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I know they have found some bones of half human, half horse. And they were fused perfectly. The vertebrae came right together.
Wow.
And what they did was they said, well, some predators ate the head off of a horse and the neck, and they ate the bottom of a man, and then they drug them together, and that's why you're seeing this event. And, you know, they're really stretching hard to disqualify
right.
that. But, you know, one of those Occam razor things, it's pretty obvious if it fits perfect and the vertebrae all fit together perfect, most likely.
Wow, that's amazing.
There were half human, half horses running around.
You never know.
Have you come across a lot of this in your studies? Have you come across much of the mythology actually? You know, I know Cremo has quite a lot of forbidden archaeology that nobody wants to talk about, but.
No, you know, I actually there is an out of place artifact that I work with that what I consider to be an out of place artifact anyway. It's not an actual object, sort of like what he's discovered. You know, when you think of him uncovering shoes and millions of year old coal mines or things like that. But there is a depiction of a device in a place called Abydos, Egypt, that the ancient Egyptians referred to as the ladder or tower or stairway to heaven. And it looks like the biblical Ark of the Covenant with this antenna attached to it.
Uh-huh.
You see it almost nowhere else in ancient Egypt, and so it's very out of place, but yet they attached incredible reverence to it. And they also said, interestingly enough, that this device, which they referred to as the backbone of Osiris, and it featured this sort of like this power tower almost. They said that this tower was erected at the change of ages, and especially at the end of the Great Age. And so it's kind of key to me that we should start gaining awareness of this device at this time now, as we're shifting in age and getting ready to conclude the Great Age.
Yeah, maybe it's some kind of a frequency generator that maintains, you know, a certain frequency or consciousness or something of that nature.
Well, you know, what's interesting about it, James, is that when I first started looking into it, it clearly you get that impression that that's what this thing is. And with having not yet gone to Abydos, I just kind of intuitively superimposed a meditating person over this pillar and said, okay, well, if they're talking about the ladder or stairway to heaven, what if they're talking about the human body and that's its function from the soul's perspective?
Mm-hmm.
And then I go to Abydos and I was just blown away because I saw the wall inside the chapel where the depiction was, and then on the opposite wall was the same pillar, but there were two changes made to it. One, the king, Seti, had transformed into the pillar, for one thing, and secondly, there was what is easily identifiable as a wormhole-shaped ship attached to the device.
Huh.
And it just became clear as a bell that this is some kind of like a transporter device or some kind of a scanner device that's scanning his body's energy so that he could be reassembled in a, perhaps in a parallel dimension or something. It's incredible to think in those terms, but that's exactly what this thing looks like.
So it's like a Star Trek teleporter.
Exactly.
Type unit.
Exactly.
You know, I've always believed, and I have no doubt at all, that we had extremely advanced technology in the past, and that the cultures would have actually moved more in towards an organic way of living. They would still have high technology, but it would move more into less mechanical, complex structures, into more simplistic structures. And as they evolved, they'd realize that the closer they are to nature, the closer they are to the source or God, and they'd have control over their environments and things of that nature. So when you see these pyramids and these other buildings, and you think about how somebody would live, a very extremely advanced culture, it would make sense that they would build things out of stone and that they would use some kind of advanced technologies to move that stone and cut that stone.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and the god that's most closely associated with this device is Osiris, who's, mm-hmm. of course, the Egyptian god of resurrection, who's always, or almost always, portrayed as a green man, mm-hmm. because he's symbolic of regeneration.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, wow, this, when you start to look at this device I'm describing, it's like, this must be like the ultimate green technology.
Yeah, it sounds like it. You know, there were beings on the Earth in a long time past that actually were copper-based,
mm-hmm.
instead of iron-based, and so their skin was green or blue, a greenish-blue. And it seems like there's still people today, I think they're in Tennessee, actually. Aren't there like some blue people that are...
Kentucky. You know,
Kentucky.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, when I was growing up, I remember clearly being in first grade, second grade. I had a woman, one of our next-door neighbors was a librarian, and she brought me over. She always had these books for kids, and
mm-hmm.
she sat me down and started telling me about the blue people in Kentucky.
Yeah.
And I never forgot that. It's like, yeah, it's true, there are. There are a group of blue people.
I met one of them. I met this guy, and he was as blue as you can, and you know, I just couldn't stand it. I go, you know, this would be kind of rude to go up and say anything, but you know, my curiosity, I just couldn't stand it. And I said, are you, you know, one of the guys from Kentucky or wherever? I said, are you one of the blue people?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, he wouldn't really, he just didn't want to talk about it.
Wow.
You know, but I was trying to do it in the nicest way I could, but I was so curious. And his skin was, his hands were totally blue, his face was blue. You know, you could tell it wasn't makeup. You know, it was quite interesting. But, you know, I felt like, boy, you know, I'm waiting for Shiva to pop out here.
I'm kidding, or Pitar or something, right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think Shiva was blue, wasn't
it? Yeah.
Wasn't Shiva
uh-huh.
blue? And who else?
Yeah, Pitar was definitely blue in ancient Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
There are some others. I've seen Hildegard of Bingen has a really incredible painting of Jesus where she calls him the man in sapphire blue, and portrays him actually as blue.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems to all be coming together. You know, the ancient knowledge of the past seems to be resurfacing, you know, much to the chagrin of some of the religions, you might say.
Well,
but it does seem like it's all coming together in just this past couple of years. It's all just coming right to the surface.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's coming so fast, it's really even hard to keep up. And when I'm giving presentations, I'll have some of the scientifically minded types in the audience, and they'll say, you know, there is no way that the ancient Egyptians portrayed a wormhole or a device, a particle accelerator capable of opening a wormhole. And my response has been, how come their symbolism matches? How come the way modern science portrays a wormhole is exactly the way the ancient Egyptians portrayed what they called the ship of eternity or the arc of the millions of years? And the answer that I propose is because modern science is rediscovering the original primordial sacred science of the divine ones or the gods.
Oh, I agree 100%. I have a replica of the Wands of Horus. And these were made by, I don't even want to try to mention his name. He's a Russian guy. But they found the Wands of Horus, and they duplicated them exactly. And they actually charged them in a three-sided pyramid for quite some time.
Wow.
And I have a replica of those, and they are interesting. When you hold on to them, and there's a friend of mine, Hope and Randy Mead, I don't know if you've met them, but they did the orbs video.
Mm.
And I have a picture of Randy holding the wands, and it's just amazing. There's this huge funnel of orbs, like a giant tornado coming right off the top of his head.
Wow.
Going all the way up into the sky. It's just incredible. And, you know, I feel it when I'm holding these things. I definitely feel a shift. And they say that the wands, you can hold them different ways for contact or for healing or for different ways of regenerating the body. And they definitely do have some property that you can definitely feel when you're holding on to them.
You know, and that brings up something I've been really curious about lately. In ancient Egypt, when they showed, they talk about not only the wands or rods of Horus, they talk about the Uaz scepter, spelled U-A-S, the Uaz scepter, and it's called the key to the Milky Way. And it's always portrayed as green, and it's supposed to conduct the vivifying sap, as they call it. And I'm like, what are you talking about, vivifying sap? Then you flip back over to the Mayans, and they talk about this serpent rope slash wormhole, and they talk about how this cosmic sap comes out of this serpent rope.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking, why do they keep talking about this sap? You know, sap is the blood of the tree, all that kind of thing. Is that what they're getting at? And then one day I decided to consult God, or a form of God, Google, and I typed in cosmic sap. And the very first entry had to do with the Mayans and the serpent rope and the opening of a hole in the Milky Way. And then a couple of lines down, it said SAP, and it referenced SAP as an acronym for subatomic particle.
Oh, wow!
So what if what they're saying in Egypt is that this rod conducts a life-giving subatomic particle, one we haven't discovered yet, perhaps. And what if the Mayans are saying the same thing around 2012, we're going to discover this subatomic particle? Well, here we are, all on the edge of our seats now, some of us anyway, waiting for them to fire up this massive particle accelerator at CERN near Geneva, which was constructed. The world's largest scientific experiment was constructed to search for an elusive subatomic particle scientists refer to as the God particle.
Uh-huh.
It's like, here we are. You know, we're trying to get a hold of this stuff all over again, except, you know, they did it with their consciousness. We're trying to do it by building a 17-mile around ring and smashing these protons together.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, I hate to say it, but it seems like our leadership has pretty much gone insane, both on the scientific community and the rest of the community as well, because the things they're playing with and doing and without any consciousness, you know, they're
right.
It's insane what they're doing.
Well, you know, there is a little bit there, and that is a huge concern too, because when they talk about the firing up of this particle accelerator at CERN, they're saying, well, wait a minute, you mean you're really going to be creating baby black holes and might even open a wormhole? Before I went to CERN last summer, I went up to Chicago to see the particle accelerator up there. They're in a race between the Fermi Lab in Chicago and CERN to find the God particle. And they did kind of point to a little bit of consciousness. The scientist that was touring me around said, you know, it's possible that we may already have detected this particle, but if it doesn't want to be seen, we're not going to find it.
Kind of like Bigfoot up here.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what Native Americans say. They say, you know, they're talking about these researchers up here trying to find Bigfoot.
Uh-huh.
And they said, you know, you'll never find Bigfoot. If Bigfoot wants to be found, it'll find you.
Right.
And it's kind of hilarious because that is the truth up here, basically. It's wandering around, but if you're unconscious, you're probably not going to get anywhere near it.
Yeah, there you go.
One of the things I wanted to share with you, I've got some footage which I think you'd love. I've got to dig it out. But it's a ship, and this beautiful golden disc comes up. Next thing you know, it turns into a big pillar of light.
Oh, my gosh.
And then it shifts from a pillar of light to an arrowhead. And then from the arrowhead, it shifts, and it looks just like the hand held up you know, is partially not closed. You know, when you're, it looks just like your hand partially closed, held up, which is the Hebrew sign for God.
Oh my gosh, that's
incredible! And then it shifts back into a disc again and takes off. And I'm watching this, and I'm going, okay, where have we heard of pillar clouds before?
Right.
You know, in the Bible, you know, the
absolutely
pillar clouds that were a fire by night. And I believe they have a lot to do with the light columns and things in Greek mythology, don't they? Or,
well, yeah, I mean, those columns are all over the place. And, wow, that puts a whole different dynamic on it when you start thinking about it in terms of a ship that has a multi-stage kind of evolution to it.
Yeah, and it seems like, and you read all these stories about, you know, Native American stories about the arrowhead in the sky guiding them, and the Bible, the pillar cloud, and then when you see it shift into the Hebrew sign for God, you're going, wait a minute, these guys have been around for a long time,
exactly,
and guiding us and kind of trying to get us to go here or there or something.
Yeah, I wrote a book called Starwalkers and the Dimension of the Blessed, and really took a look at the whole Exodus story of that pillar leading the Israelites by day and also by night. And what you're saying there kind of gives a whole new spin on this idea of what exactly was the Red Sea that was parted.
Yeah. You know, also, too, is when this pillar cloud went back over the Egyptian army, they got very, very heavy, and they couldn't walk, and they got very tired, very heavy, and they couldn't walk. Well, that's the exact effects of increasing the gravitational field that makes you very tired, lethargic, you can't march, you know, everything, you know, weighs twice as much. And then it moved in front of them, and the sea parted. So you go, well, wait a second, you know, maybe something else happened there than we're thinking. You know, maybe there was some divine action there, but it might not be exactly what we think. It might be an extremely spiritually and technologically advanced group that's been watching us for a long time.
I mean, just as you're speaking, I'm just thinking, wow, what an incredible movie you could make based on some of these concepts. Because,
you know, I had the same idea. We should get together and find the right people and put
exactly.
You know, we could make a movie that would just, people would walk out just stunned, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even if you just take a look at a string of the Bible stories together,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so much in there about technology, or what appears to be technology, and about gateways and people coming and going through
uh-huh.
gateways. It's just absolutely, you know, extraordinary. And everything that we've ever seen about the Bible, they always show those guys as these real, you know, just kind of almost backward or even primitive kind of people that had zero awakened consciousness. But in fact, these were some of the greatest sages ever to walk this planet, and they must have known what they were dealing with.
Oh, yeah. I've always felt, and I've got this idea, I don't want to let it out yet, but I've actually written a screenplay for it, and everything else is where this you have this contact, and then they're showing you all of these events and tying all the loose ends together.
Mm-hmm.
And it would bring all the different races together in the end, and you just walk out going, wow, you know, this is a whole different reality than we've been taught. And, you know, doing something of that nature and tied into physics, you know, have them give us the quantum physics of all. You know, there's another ship I wanted to tell you about. It was pretty funny. We have a ship here that shows this vortex being created. There's nothing there, and all of a sudden this mist starts appearing, and all of a sudden this door opens up in the middle of it, and it's square with a window in it, and then the ship pops out the window.
Whoa.
And takes off. You know, so it's tying into what you're talking about. You know, is that they have the ability now, and I'm sure in the past they probably had this same technology where they could actually open up a wormhole or do whatever they want and just either appear, you know, with a scepter and make it happen, or they could do it with a ship or teleport, or who knows.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that always got me early on. I mean, I started kind of in the UFO side. I watched the, I don't know, 1990, something like that. I went and watched the Randy Winters video documentary about Billy Meyer and the Pleiadian ships and that.
Uh-huh.
And was of course, blown away like everybody and not sure what I was really seeing. But I remember driving home from that event that night and looking at the stars and for the first time saying, well, wait a minute, those lights up there, those aren't little two-dimensional specks of light. There's three-dimensional space behind all that.
Yeah.
And it just kind of took my mind and just opened it wide open. And I started reading Sitchin pretty heavy. And it just seemed like more often than not, he was talking in terms of these gods coming and going through gates.
Uh-huh.
And so I started paying really close attention to some of the artwork in ancient Sumeria, Egypt, elsewhere, where they clearly show these guys coming through gates. And now I've got a pretty good collection of these images, and there's almost always a spiritual attunement that is portrayed in these events. You'll see a couple of goddesses, for example, on either side of the gate, with outstretched arms, beaming energy to a figure who's standing in the gate, and very often they've got a rod or a wand in their hand. Mm-hmm. And it became clear to me that what we're looking at here is this shift in consciousness is portrayed, and when they show these guys in the gates, they're really kind of in an intermediate phase. They're neither here nor there.
Yeah.
And it just really now gives me a whole new kind of picture with what you described here about the door just turning into a ship itself, or the ship opening the door. It's incredible.
Yeah, you know, what else is strange is when you hear about these people walking on the ships, their stories are similar. They said they see something really small with a door, and they go into it, and when they walk into the thing, it's like 1,200 times bigger than what they were looking at, which makes sense when you get into quantum physics, because the higher the frequency, the smaller the particle.
Mm.
And so as you would move through this door, you know, people don't understand. We actually have it backwards. We're very large here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're very big beings. But when you get into quantum physics, things, as you go into the higher frequencies, the particles are smaller. And if you went through that gate, you would probably condense to the particles on that level, and you'd be in a whole different reality, which would most likely, you know, be much more expansive than you're seeing it here on this level.
You know, wow.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And in fact, mentioning the Egyptian connection again, they referred to, once they go through the gate, they are going to a place they refer to as the field or the dimension of the blessed.
Uh-huh.
Which is kind of an interesting term for it, because it's all about a shift in consciousness, a preparation towards entering that field or dimension of the blessed. That's what all of their existence was about.
Uh-huh. You know, it seems like in some of their paintings I've seen is they have all these different levels. And they have, you know, your basic human person, and then they have lower levels where people have fallen into greed and just real decadence or whatever. And then they have some freaky creatures on the very bottom. And then, but above the normal human level, then they have these other levels where there's these very spiritually evolved beings, and then above that are higher beings, and then gods, and it seems to be a multi-level system, which is what I've experienced myself.
Yeah, and I mean that. It's most clearly described in the what they call the Book of Gates, which you'll see in some of the tombs of the kings. Where they portray that the transformation of the Pharaoh into literally a light being. And the object of the quest was to go through these various gates. You'd have all these helpers that come along that represent aspects of our consciousness. And what they were attempting to do was to put on the new clothes, the garment of light, the robe of glory, the body of bliss, all the various names that are ascribed to our light aspect. And once you had that, you were good to go, ready to launch at the next higher spiral of evolution.
Mm-hmm.
So I've spent quite a bit of time lately working on this whole idea of the light body and how it happened. It was kind of interesting. I had a really neat couple come up to me at the Bay Area UFO Expo a couple years ago, and they told me that they really enjoyed watching my presentations and were really into the whole wormhole idea. And they said, "We think your work has answered for us something that the Tibetans wouldn't answer for us or kept secret." And they told me that they both had PhDs from the Harvard Divinity School, and they worked with the Tibetans. They translated a lot of their documents and lived in India. But they said they never could answer the question about what would happen when these lamas would affect what they called the great perfection, where they would spin or accelerate the frequency of their body and spin it into a vortex they called the rainbow body.
Mm-hmm.
And the Tibetans, they said, would never say where these people went. They talked about 28 different solar systems, but they never talked about where they went or how they got there. They said it makes so much sense that what happened is that when they entered into the rainbow body, the body of light, is the body literally opened a wormhole.
Uh-huh.
And I started hitting the books on that and looking at some of the various depictions of, well, for example, Jesus and his transfiguration, and it clearly does show that two-step process where Jesus puts on the robe of glory or the garment of light, and then behind him, almost invariably in these transfiguration paintings, is an open gateway, usually either concentric rings symbolizing vibration and also a gateway or a vortex, or a star pattern indicating that he is entering into a star. And it's like, well, there it is, right there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. I know some of the teachings that I went through, I studied with the Tibetan Lama for a little while, and the way I met him, he actually appeared to me, and I was meditating, and all of a sudden he just appeared right in front of me.
Wow.
And he's in the Flying Lama lineage. And I learned quite a bit earlier about that, and, you know, was initiated and everything. And I actually have some photographs. If you go to my bio and look at them, I think it'd be really interesting. But there's a technique where you spin your bands. And we have these bands of energy around them, and you get these bands spinning. And the faster you get them spinning, you do through your own consciousness by just visualizing it happen, and your body will start rocking. And then all of a sudden, you'll start moving out of your body. And I have a picture of me halfway in transition where you can see one body on the ground, and my eyes are closed. The next body up, my eyes are open, and it's a bigger body, and it's leaving the first body. And you can see the bands. You can really clearly see the bands.
Wow.
And it's a technique that just, it came to me naturally because I've had a lot of past lives doing things of that nature. And it just came to me naturally. But I found out later, I know there's a school here. It's the, I don't know what they call it now. It used to be the Rompa School of Enlightenment. And they teach this spinning the bands. And they teach a lot of this in the process, and you know, people are like disappearing and bilocating and all kinds of things, and what's happening here, I mean, you definitely have to come to the ranch sometime and experience what's going on here, is we'll be meditating, and there's another person this happens with as well, as Michal led with. We seem to disappear, but we're totally conscious, and it seems like we're here 100%, but you'll walk up to people, and it scares the hell out of them because they're looking right at you, and all of a sudden you just appear. When you start talking to them, somehow it shifts the energy.
Wow.
And you appear again, and they just jump out of their shoes, basically. And it happens here quite a bit, and I can't really, it doesn't seem any different. But what I understand about it is that it's not really that hard to move just out of this frequency to where people can't see you, but it seems so natural, and you can see yourself, you see everything around you. And I know the higher dimensions can see in the lower dimensions, and there's beings walking along right beside us all the time. We just can't see them.
Yeah, I mean, that feels so right. And I just saw the movie Jumper today.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about a guy that can jump with his consciousness that way. It was kind of interesting movie.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it seems like that concept is really starting to be more and more implanted in the mass consciousness, this idea of jumping and spinning the energy of the body. And
mm-hmm.
It's, you know, maybe it's just purely synchronistic with 2012, or maybe it is really the next step. How do you think it relates to the beings on the ships? Do you think that they all have achieved this ability, do you think?
You know what I understand in some of my conversations with the highly evolved ones, like the Pleiadians and those
mm-hmm.
groups, they actually could levitate and bilocate before they could do it with their ships and their technology.
Hmm.
So they evolved spiritually, and their technology caught up to their spirituality, and that's the serious. That's what they're very seriously interested in here, concerned about. is that our technology has far superseded our spirituality, and we don't know what we're doing, and we're trying to pop open doors and do things. And, you know, it goes back to that one saying, you know, about you can't take heaven by force. You know,
mm-hmm.
you can't. It just doesn't work, and these other guys are trying to do it. And I think a lot of times what they're going to find, you know, even when you power up on the ships and you shift into another dimension, or you're flying in what they call creation, you're actually a light being. Your ship's a light ship, and it's like having a near-death experience. And when they reappear again, so they're very clear about the field, you know, and the one field, and you know how everything's unified and connected, and they just live that way. They don't see any separation. There's no competition. There's none of that. It's just
mm-hmm.
not part of the reality.
Yeah, because, you know, when I was watching Contact Has Begun, and you had some of that incredible footage of those ships that just looked like they were alive, they were pulsing, and they just seemed so biological. And as I was watching that, I'm thinking about some of the Tibetan depictions of the lamas in their rainbow body, and they just portray them as in a human form, but they're in a rainbow sphere.
Yeah. And like a Merkaba.
Like a Merkaba. I'm like, this has got to be the same thing. This is what we're looking at, isn't it?
Exactly. When I try to explain the beings that we're in contact with, what I tell them is that if you took all of your enlightened masters that walked on the earth and created a civilization of them, and then start thinking about the people that taught them, and that then you start grasping who these beings are. And, you know, what's frustrating for me is that trying to get this information out on who these beings are, unfortunately, in ufology, you've got everybody trying to keep it in the past, you know, keep it in Roswell. I mean, everything's in the past, or it's up in the sky far away. Everybody, you know, Billy Bob looking up going, hey, Bob, what is it?
Right,
you know?
Right.
And that's as far as they want to go with it. They
mm-hmm.
they don't want to take the next step. And it's sad that, you know, they're very focused on the negative aspect of it, you know, the abduction and black ops and things like that, which is just a thimbleful, and they're not looking at the highly evolved ones, the very spiritually advanced ones, which is really where we should be going. I mean, they're the ones that have full use of creational energies, and, you know, they've transcended disease and material need and war and all the things that we're struggling with right now. We should be focusing on that and getting their message out.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I'm so fired up about looking back at this Egyptian stuff in the green technology that's portrayed there, because it is a consciousness that goes along with it, the consciousness of regeneration and immortality. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, the Egyptians, they just laid it out there for us. I mean, at that temple at Abydos I'm speaking of, you have the king's list on one of the walls, and then you have a list of the gods on the opposite wall. And that the list of the gods goes back around 40,000 years, which Egyptologists say, oh, that's ridiculous. The Egyptians didn't know what they were talking about when they made this list. But at the very beginning of that list is a time and a group of beings they called it Zep-Tepi, the first time, when a group of beings referred to as the Shemsu Hor, or the Aku was another name for them. And when you look up Aku in the Egyptian Hieroglyphic Dictionary and Budge's Dictionary, it says light beings,
uh-huh.
wise, instructed folk.
Yeah, that's kind of a no-brainer.
That's pretty much, there it is right there. It's like,
yeah.
Any questions? But
uh-huh.
nobody talks about that.
You know, it is amazing. You know, and these beings are still around. And you know, what they've explained to me is they said there's this incredible unified field, whatever you want to call it, the source, God, the supreme
mm-hmm.
intelligence. And it's all connected, you know, and all life, everything exists within this field. And they said the Earth is kind of a sore point right now. It's a real distortion in the force, you know, in the field. And so it's drawing all of these beings to it right now that are full service oriented to come and assist in this birthing process that we're undergoing. And it does seem like, it seems like your research is pointing to that same effect, that we are getting ready to go through a major birth process.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, I've kind of like combined some of Terrence McKenna's stuff. Another big inspiration was Dr. Charles Muses, who was a mathematician and looked at a lot of the Egyptian stuff, and both of them, both McKenna and Muses, talked about or just really highly emphasized our bodies as being in transition.
Uh-huh.
And the term metamorphosis comes into play here, and it's always the metamorphosis into a light being. And so what I'm constantly looking for is are the targets. I mean, that's what we need. I mean, we have the coding within us. We don't really necessarily, like a caterpillar doesn't need somebody to tell it how to become a butterfly. It already knows how to do that.
Uh-huh.
What it needs is the culture that will support that transformation and that transition. And so I've gone back and looked at various cultures like the Cathars in southern France that did create a culture where a portion of their civilization would be fully committed to the path of transforming into light, and the rest of the culture, the civilization, was there to support them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we need at this time. And you get hopeful when you start seeing, like, Steven Spielberg's new movie. He's going to be coming out within the next couple of years. He's just starting production on it. Major movie is called Interstellar. Its subject matter is wormholes.
Huh.
And it looks to me like, okay, here's going to be a new contact-type movie, a new ET kind of consciousness shift. And hopefully our culture is shifting into this realm where we will begin to more and more support this idea that, hey, it's okay to affect this transformation. In fact, this is what it's all about.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, that's why I built this center here. It's like a acupuncture point for the planet, and there's so much energy coming through here, and the veils are so thin here. People come here and have all kinds of experiences, and because we've laid the groundwork here, we are getting all kinds of help from these higher dimensional beings that are, I call it dazzle duty. They fly in, they power the ship. You know, and you're okay, we're here, and then people have to deal with it after that. You know, it's funny watching people. We have a joke here because when people see these ships, when they come in and they power up and they fire up, you know, light up the sky, and people see them, there's three things they say. And, you know, the first one's like, oh, my God, you know. And then the other one they say is like, holy shit. And then it's what the F, you know. And it doesn't matter who you are. I mean, you would not be prone to cussing or anything, but when that happens, you're just going, what the heck is, you know, it's like, and then all of a sudden your whole reality gets turned upside down, you know, that this is real, and you go, if this is real, then what else have I been told that's not real, and who are they, and am I connected to them, and it just keeps going on and on and on,
right.
And people start opening up.
Yeah, I was mighty curious about that comment, about that ancient legend, about the possibility of a city within Mount Adams or underneath Mount Adams?
Yeah, it's there's a crystal city there, and they used to take their sick or their wounded to kind of a portal that was there, and it would open up, and they would take, the beings would come out and take them down. And they said every once in a while one would come out and walk among the village, and they would teach them, you know, how to heal and do certain things. And they said this strange thing about them is their eyes glowed at night, and which was quite interesting. But there's a lot to those stories. There's a lot of different stories about that. But you know, it's, I would just love to take a little trip there one of these days. I think I know where the door is. But,
wow.
You know, you have to reach a certain level, I think, before they would, you know, let you come in or welcome you in. But we've seen, what's really strange, we've seen on the mountain a cross, this big white cross, like a light cross, and all of a sudden things pop, come flying out of it, and then it shuts, and then it closes, you know. And then you go up there, and there's nothing there. There's absolutely nothing there. All there are is lava boulders and you know, where this happens. So they have some technology to create a door that's probably some kind of a hard hologram or something. I don't know what it is, but you would never know there was anything there.
Wow. Well, I mean, it just reminds me of when I was looking at the Tibetan rainbow body tradition, just the how powerful a role imagination plays in that whole process.
Oh, definitely.
And, you know, it's just pure consciousness, it's pure imagination, that they're they're dealing with.
You know, yeah, it's bringing the energies up and through and holding the focus and whatever you're imagining focusing on. If you can hold that focus and collapse time, you're going to manifest it.
Right.
And it's kind of interesting that these lamas, you know, I have photographs of some of the lamas where they're just disappearing. You can see a Tonka right through them, you know, on the wall behind them, and they're just barely there. And one of the lamas I was with, he, like I was saying before, he's in the flying lineage. And I don't think they actually flew. They would just go out of body and travel and meet people and do things like that. But I do think they had the ability to jump levels, you know, where we wouldn't really see them flying around. They would actually rise up and vanish and go into the next dimension or whatever.
Mm-mm-mm.
And you think about them coming back. Now, there's the gift, you know. After you leave and take off like that and disappear and go into the next dimension or whatever, I would have a hard time coming back. I would say, boy, I'm glad that's over with, you know.
Yeah, no kidding. It's like, yeah, just, you know, let's close the door and leave. But
yeah, whatever you do, don't open that door again, you know.
But, I mean, that just says there must be something really special either about the human race or this place in general that would prompt that.
Yeah, it seems what they've told me is that many, many different races, that we're just this big genetic soup down here. And they said there was a knuckle dragger, you know, according to the Sitchin work, that is correct. There is a knuckle dragger that was jumped up genetically, you know, to be a part of the program here. But there's also beings that colonized the Earth way before that have come and gone due to cataclysms and major Earth changes, that some of them just packed up and left, you know, and others tried to ride the changes out and didn't make it or got caught off guard. So you know, we're this huge mix, and they actually brought from the star nations, they all brought their a lot of their animals and plant forms and things of that nature.
Mm-mm.
So you really think about it, the Earth is just this huge galactic zoo, multicultural star nation zoo, and I think that's one of the reasons why it's so precious. You know, it needs to be, you know, cherished and supported and cleaned up and restored.
Well, I mean, with the work you're doing, I mean, that's a major role in what's going to cause that transformation. So, just really, really thrilled to see what you're doing, James. I mean, it's just incredible.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you're doing your part as well, you know, bringing this ancient knowledge out and getting people to wrap their head around the fact that we're much more than we think we are. You know?
Yeah, but, I mean, when you think about bringing people up to your place up there and they have an opportunity to experience what they can experience if they're whatever they're ready for, I mean, that's it right there. That's where the rubber really meets the road.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun. I have fun doing it. I have fun watching people's reactions. You know, people. You know what gives me the most joy is watching people release the past and
right.
heal and release their stuff and take that jump.
Mm-hmm.
And then watch them have experiences that really push them, you know, to stretch their boundaries and go beyond. And it's exhilarating, you know, watching. They get such a high and you're so excited, you know, when the things. We have the kids come here. I love it because a lot of the kids come here and they go, oh, there's nothing going on here, and they're bored and everything. And I said, I tell you what, go out in that field and just think of bubbles all around you like bubbles and just kind of have fun and get giddy and dance around and just act stupid or goofy, you know. And they go, yeah, right. And I go, trust me, I'll show you something. I'll take a picture of you and it'll blow your mind. And so they do, and I take a picture of them. There's light spheres all around them.
Wow.
And they go, holy smoke, and they get all, and they go, whoa, and they go, let's do it again, and then they run out, and then they start getting really, really goofy and weird, and we take more, and then there's tons more, you know, and pretty soon the whole field fills up with these light spheres, and you know, it's a major opening for them, and that's why I'm trying to get this place finished so we can get a lot more people up here and kind of support, especially the younger people coming in, that, you know, show them that there's a lot more to them in the universe than, you know, they're taught in the school system that we have today.
You mean there's more to life than video games?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they shove them into these schools and they cram their heads with all this recycled ignorance, you know.
Right.
And make nice little consumers and work bots out of them, and they don't really teach them that, you know, everything's one, everything's unified, and all the basic principles that are necessary for a healthy society and environment.
Yeah.
Just not taught.
Yeah, we need cosmic kindergarten.
Yeah. You know what we need to do is get the kindergartners and put them in the teaching role and then have the teachers sit down and listen to them. Then our schools would take a quantum leap.
That's for sure. When I started doing all this, I was actually talking about kids in the new consciousness going around and collecting kids' stories of their interactions with angels and ETs, and it's absolutely profound.
Oh, yeah.
What they have and what they say. And I know there's parents today that probably, my sister has a 4-year-old daughter, and she is all the time talking about how she wants to go through the wormhole again, and my sister's like, where are you getting this?
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I know we used to have sweat lodges here, and the parents would come and bring their kids. And they're nice because when you go into the sweat lodge, everybody's equal.
Mm-hmm.
There's no male, no female. Everybody's equal. Everybody's, and the kids, the adults, everybody. And, you know, you pass the talking stick, and each kid gets to do their thing. And they're honored equally. And then they're allowed to talk. And when they go through the ceremony and they say their piece, the parents are just usually crying. I mean,
wow.
They're embarrassed.
Mm.
And they're going, man, I forgot. They realize
right.
They totally forgot what's important.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I believe. If we start giving, you know, the children a voice again and listening to them and they can help remind us of what we forgot.
Absolutely.
You know, I did a radio show the other day. It was pretty funny. And this woman said, well, so when did you, she goes, so you went through all this stuff as a child. She said, so when you grew up, then what happened? And I started laughing. She goes, what's so funny? I said, I never did.
Right.
I said, she goes, what do you mean? I go, I never grew up.
Right.
I said, growing up sucks. So I said, are you happy? You know, it was pretty funny. But, you know, that's what Jesus said. You've got to become like a child. You have to get back to that sense of awe.
Oh, yeah.
And release the past, you know, all the wounds and traumas. And then you can enter the kingdom of heaven, which is just a state of consciousness.
Yeah, I mean, I try to consciously choose to do things that I really enjoyed doing when I was a kid.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
your cells remember, your body remembers, your spirit remembers, and it just kind of keeps you at that in that kind of place.
Well, I wish I haven't been able to travel and get away to the pyramids and some of the places you've been, and boy, that's on my list. But I think I'm going to wait till things settle down a little bit. You know, and wait till I get my beam ship back, and then I can teleport over there or buzz over there and walk around, you know, and check out those sites, especially Abydos. I'm very attracted to that and the Hathor temple.
Oh, yeah.
Now the Hathors, they call them the Hathors, but I talked to a king over there, and he was telling me that it's actually Hathor is the original word, and that we've gotten it wrong, which is interesting. And he said the original word is Hathor, and for some reason we've misunderstood. But, you know, those beings were the lion, kind of half human lion beings that people actually say they look like cows because they have the big ears.
Right.
You know, but it's actually, they're part of the felines. And I've actually experienced one of the felines, and they're beautiful beings.
Oh, yeah.
And the Hathors as well. I've experienced them as well, and they're exquisitely, just beautiful, extremely advanced beings. Now, one of the Hathors that I had an experience with was very small. It was a female, and she was probably only maybe 5 feet tall at the most.
Oh, interesting. You know, because when we were there, you know, by the way, Dr. Brooks Agnew was with us on this past tour.
Oh, awesome.
And we got there, you know, of course, when you're with Brooks, you're always talking about the inner earth and this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And people were getting all kinds of hits about Dendera, the Temple of Love and Joy, the Hathor Temple, as a gateway to the inner earth, and seeing all kinds of depictions of tiny beings and this sort of thing. And it was a really, really powerful kind of way of looking at that temple.
Yeah. You know, from my understanding, is they said that all of those temples are connected underground.
Oh, sure.
And they have these immense tunneling systems, And those tunneling systems actually go to the inner earth eventually. They're all interconnected.
So, I absolutely go with that. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that that's what we're dealing with there.
A lot of these earthquakes are starting to open up some of these tunnels. You know, they're in Turkey, I think they had some major quakes, and now they found, all of a sudden they found some tunnels and some other things there, and they don't know where they go or who built them or anything. That would be good to hop down one of those and take a little...
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, but when you really get it right, you can actually go just out of body. You can, you know, take off and meet these beings and find out they do exist. And there's whole civilizations living right alongside of us. They're just in a little bit different frequency.
Right. Yeah, they're there to talk with us all the time, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, and even, I mean, they're, some of those ancient Egyptian statues are just so powerful that, I mean, even if you're not awake, they'll start talking to you. It's incredible.
I definitely need to get over there and have that experience. We're getting close to the end of the hour, and before we go, I'd love to give your... Can you give your website out and how people can contact you?
Yeah, my website is williamhenry.net. Williamhenry.net, and go hop on over. I've got all kinds of books available, DVDs, articles, blog, all that sort of thing. I'd love to have everybody pop by.
That'd be great, and pick up some of the DVDs and look at those ancient temples and see what kind of hit, you know, you get on the inner level.
Yeah, my presentations tend to be very visual just because I like to let the pictures themselves do the talking, and they do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really a great way to approach it, and people enjoy it.
Well, be sure and leave July 4th in your calendar open if you can, because that's when we're having our big conference up here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's Independence Day. Everybody can
become
independent of
great.
The ignorance and the everything else is holding down, and come up and have an experience that's out of this world.
Oh, that is great, James. Absolutely. I'll definitely do that.
And we'll definitely get you up. Well, time to sign off. I can't thank you enough. It's been an awesome show. And we'll get you back on again real soon. I know there's a heck of a lot more we could talk about.
Yeah, anytime. I would love to talk anytime, James. Thank you so much for allowing me to come on tonight.
All right, awesome. This is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, signing off. Have a great evening. Good night.